Well, welcome to another episode of the Dead Frog Podcast. I am your host, Joe Felix. I'm joined here with Allie Kloster.
Hello, hello, tis I.
And we're both here to dive into the art of stand-up comedy, where we're going to analyze, critique, and overall have fun with everything related to stand-up. But today, we're dealing with one of the masters of stand-up, one of the most prolific and like biggest stars of stand-up, Howie Mandel. We'll be covering his set that was part of his North American tour. You can find this clip on YouTube under North America Watusi Tour. The segment that we're going to focus on starts at 6:45 and it lasts until around the 19-minute mark. With us to discuss this is a big Howie Mandel fan, Dennis Jacobs. He recently released and recorded his first album, Tiny Hat, Big Jokes, at the Sycamore Tavern. How more LA can you get? Dennis Jacobs, you can find him and his work. He's worked on Two and a Half Men, Dr. Ken, Anger Management, The Series, Nikki, Ricky, Dicky, and Don, and a bunch of other stuff. He's been doing stand-up comedy for over 10 years. And actually, every time I find out about someone doing stand-up for around that time and knowing about the Nerd Melt venue, I always feel a little bit of kinship with them. Please welcome to the pod, Dennis Jacobs.
Hey, thanks, guys. I appreciate you having me on.
Dude, thanks for being here.
Pretty stoked. Yeah, man, Nerd Melt was incredible. I'm really bummed that we don't have that venue anymore.
Yeah, I know that made a lot of comics, like just being good there.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you see guys like, Kumail and Jonah Ray, like being able to have that space to show off. It was very, very impressive.
Well, yeah, there's a list. Like even Aislinn B.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, she would perform there quite a bit. I think, I forget his name, but he's part of this online group, which we're just going to cut past it because I'm forgetting the names. But first, tell us a little bit about your journey in stand-up.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually, it's kind of a funny story. The first time I actually told jokes in front of people was in elementary school. And I convinced my fifth grade and my fourth grade teachers to let me leave my fifth grade class early and go down to the class in fourth grade and tell jokes there.
Oh my gosh.
I wasn't doing my own material. I was just rehearsing and rehashing other people's material. Well, funny enough, I actually was doing a lot of Howie Mandel stuff back then because Howie has a character named Bobby. And at the time I could do that voice like perfectly. Then I started doing my own stuff in high school. I grew up in a small town in Florida called Sebastian. And then when I went to college at Syracuse University and did a lot of stand-up there. Myself and an old buddy of mine started a stand-up group on campus because that made a lot of sense to start a group of people doing things individually. and then moved to LA. Was doing stand-up for a bit when I first moved here, but it was a weird scene then, and it really wasn't like it's an incredible community right now. I firmly believe that. And back then it just wasn't. There really wasn't like a lot of camaraderie and kinship, you know. Crowds were also way worse then. Like stand-up, like LA just wasn't a fun town to be doing stand-up in for the most part. And so I kind of got away from it. And then in the past like 4 or 5 years, I really jumped back into it full feet.
That's yeah, awesome. There was definitely a dark period in stand-up around like between 2008 and like 2012.
Yes.
And I think that's where you really got these, you either left stand-up for a bit or you stayed and you became incredibly jaded or you made your strides and you actually, did something about it.
Yeah, it was weird because, you know, it was far removed from like the 90s, like you just need a tight 10 and you can get a sitcom era. And you know, was before where we are now, where you had places like Netflix and Amazon that were just bigger outlets for more people to be seen and doing things like that. So it was just kind of a super weird time where it was like, you have to prove that, like, this is what you're all about. We're judging you every step of the way. So
yeah, and then you can also rise out of obscurity given the new social media platforms.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And that would help you get, that helps you get booked quite a bit now.
That makes sense. I mean, I am not a stand-up comedian, and just hearing this, it makes sense completely with correlating to just the rise of the YouTube age, the social media age and everything. It's kind of like the middle, like no one, it was like, what's the Britney Spears song? Like, not quite a girl, not yet a woman or something.
That's it. It's, yeah, kind of, you like, nailed it.
It's kind of like that middle weird awkward stage where no one knew what the heck, like, I feel like I can totally see how it's like the middle school, like the awkward middle school years before this new Quibi age that we live in.
Yeah. It was definitely the puberty time of stand up. That's definitely. Yeah, for sure.
So you've shared with us your first sort of experience with stand up.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, yeah, yeah. So, you talk about the my first like original stuff.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So it's funny. It's actually in my it's in my hour. And I talk about how the first time I actually did my own original material was in high school. It was at a pep rally, and at the time there was this fashion craze where white dudes were wearing visors upside down and backwards.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah. And so I had like this stupid joke about like, why are all these white guys wearing visors upside down and backwards looking like a drunk duckbill platypus, you know?
There we go.
And the whole front row was white dudes with visors upside down and backwards. And I had to like, and they were not laughing. And I had to like ask my friends on the football team. I was like, could you guys walk me to my car, please? So, oh, no. You know, knowing your audience is a really important thing you have to learn early on as a stand-up.
Oh my gosh. So you were hosting, you were like an MC for a pep rally.
Exactly. Yep.
And you, this was you off the cuff. Did you plan this bit or was it just totally off the cuff?
Oh, I wrote this bit. I was so proud of myself for thinking that this genius observation I had and needed to share with the world. And it was like terrible Seinfeldian, like, what's the deal? It was awful.
So did nobody laugh because they ran the school, quote unquote, or what was it? Like, what do you think?
No, they didn't get that. Like, I like that they looked dumb. Like, this was a bad idea that like that wasn't enough. Like, there was no, you know, in that time in high school, people ability to be like self-aware, like poke fun at themselves, especially with that group was there.
I like the idea of like you doubling down on the bit and being like, don't you understand?
Right.
I'm talking about you.
You. Look at your buddy. Doesn't he look stupid? Why are you not laughing? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That is so funny. Did you say the thing about did you riff and say I need you, the high school football friends to walk me out? Or did you, was that just something like internal you thought?
No, that was,
that would have been funny if you said that
if I was not terrified, I would have said that and been able to recover. But I really went to my friend Kevin, who was like the biggest dude on the football team. He also played basketball. He was like 6'4", 6'5". And I was like, can you walk me to my car? Can you and the boys please walk me to my car? I think I pissed off all the white folk.
Oh my gosh. That is amazing. Just the visual of a bunch of like guys with upside down visors trying to like stalk you and get you is also pretty funny. Yeah. Not funny, but just, you know.
Yeah.
Just kind of a little funny.
It's pretty funny now. Yeah.
Man, well, I'm glad you survived that episode.
You and I both, Allie. Thank you.
Of course.
Wait, one last question. Looking back at that joke, how do you feel about it now?
It's actually, it's funny now because there's, when I tell it in the hour, I put a qualifier on it that I thought about so much later. that I like do as a throwaway, but I was like, because I wear a yarmulke every day. Reform Jew, which is not a normal thing for Reform Jews to wear yarmulke, but I've been wearing yarmulke since I was in high school. And I put a throwaway on it, like, you're like, what's the deal with this? Like, you know, like, I'm one visor short of a whole hat. And so, like that line makes me, like, giggle so much.
That's good.
So I do have a fondness for that joke now. But, yeah, it's just terrible. It's just it perfectly encapsulates, like, a young comedian.
Sorry. Nailed it. Really like, sometimes, like, when you're coming up with material, you're like, this is a punchline. This is something I can use. Not now. Yes. Like, I'm gonna be able to not reuse it, but like recontextualize it, and then it's in the hit. I just gotta save it for a few months or even like years.
Oh yeah, I think the best comedians steal from themselves all the time. You know, it's just you're just stealing from yourself. You know, later, like future you is stealing from past you because you didn't know, you know, you had no clue what you had there. Yeah, I think I completely agree with you on that.
Dang, I've never had it put that way. That's really interesting. You know, now we can look back at Howie Mandel and realize, I'm just kidding. I'm just trying to segue into the ad break and then listening to the clip. So, Just stick around. You'll hear a word from our sponsor, and you'll hear the clip. Oh, and actually, this is the first time that I strongly advise people go and watch the clip as opposed to just listening to it on the podcast. But we'll be right back.
Buddy, come here for a minute. That'd be me. What's your name? Kelly! And what do you do for a living? I'm a PA system! What do you do, Kelly? You work for her dad. Oh, that's good. So you don't really love her. He's fucking you for a job. What do you do for her dad?
I fuck his daughter.
Son, I got a job for you. See Lisa in the other room? What do you do? He's a cabinet maker. Really? And what is your job?
Sweeping up.
You sweep up for a cabinet maker. So he saws and then he'll go, sweep this up. Now go home and fuck my daughter. Are you married? You're not married? How long have you been going out? Person! What's your name? I'll just call you Sybil. Mike, and what do you do, Mike? I don't understand. What do you do? You're all wearing ties, except Mike. It's like you got your own language. I don't even understand what the fuck you're talking about. It's like being in Europe. It's like my show just went to Europe. I don't understand what you three are talking about. What do you do? You notice that when you're talking to somebody that doesn't speak the language, what do? We talk louder and slower, right? Where's the bus?
Here's your number.
Where is the bus? Do that the other way around. Somebody comes up to you and he goes, "Mimic the number." And you go, "I'm sorry, I don't understand." So he goes, You go, "Oh, it's right over there." What's your name?
Dave.
What do you do, Dave?
Purchasing.
Some people call that shopping. You get up in the morning, you grab a little cart, some of this, I'm purchasing. I'm Dave, this is my job. What do you purchase, Dave?
Anything they want.
Anything they want. Dave, go get me some popcorn. Go to work. Is there popcorn out there? Go get me popcorn. Is there snacks?
Drinks.
Go get me something to drink. Go get me a drink. Go get me a drink. Get me anything. Get the fuck out of here. Give me a drink. Stand up. You came in and you were really happy because you said, I got a good seat. I'm right up front, right? Did you think that? You thought that, didn't you? But these aren't attached. Purchase your way back. You're a nut, Dave. What's your name?
Bob,
but you spell yours backwards, right? What do you do, Bob?
I work in a laboratory.
You work in a laboratory, and what are you, a rat? Are they experimenting on you, Dave? Jamming cigarette butts up your ass? They stopped doing that. No, what do you do in the laboratory?
Food laboratory.
It's a food laboratory. So you're experimenting with sandwiches and stuff? Sorry, I had a call coming.
What?
Look, well, that's good. Go get it, idiot! Come on, go get it. Get it. Go get it. Oh, he'll be right back. Is he your husband? No? Is he... Here. Yeah. You're gonna spend the whole thing standing. You're nuts.
No, that's okay.
No, let me place it. Let me place it. Oh yeah. I'll give you a good seat. I'll give you a good seat. I'll move right back. I got a feeling you're gonna get hired by the end of my show. Here, you just sit up here. This is me. You know what? I'll ask you something. Look at this. Here's something. Dave, I'll ask you this. Dave, have you ever seen one of these? You ever seen one of these? Well, then look, stupid. So stupid. You just look and see. Now tomorrow when somebody says, hey, Dave, you ever seen one of these? You can go, yeah, Howie showed me one. Hey, Dave. Hey, Dave. Trick now. How you feeling? You feeling good? Abracadabra, I'm going to give you a headache. You like 3D? The whole 3D deal? Like the okay, I know you would because it's like a special effect. Watch this. Doesn't it look like it's coming right at you? This movie's over an hour long. Is this your date?
No.
I've just been feeling her up.
What, how long have you been going out?
You met him in the parking lot.
Are you serious?
Are you one of those women? Is this costing you? You've been purchasing? I know you're a type. One of them came up to me and they said to me, hey, honey, I'll do it with you for $25. And I said, I am married, right? So she says, so what? I said, so what? My wife will do it for $10. What do you mean you met in the parking lot? Where'd you meet? Really, in the parking lot? You don't know each other? Oh, in the parking lot at work. Oh, so then it's a relationship. Have you ever seen her naked? Would you like to see her naked? Take off your clothes. Would you like to see her naked? Come on, take off your shirt and let us light your nipples on fire. Just the thought of it's gonna give me a boner. I love that word, boner. I love getting a boner and then running really fast into a brick wall. My mom used to always make me do that. These are good seats, huh, Dave? Why don't you move up a little closer? Do you wanna go sit down? Well, big fucking deal. You can sit down. Go sit down. Yeah, I need the chair. Go ahead. That's great. Is that like one woman? Do you live with anyone, ma'am? You are so fucking loud. I have a microphone and you're louder. What is your name? What's your name?
Joanne.
And what do you do, Joanne? I'm a student in Toronto. Two people love that. I'm from Canada. I moved down here. It's weird being from Canada and moving down here. It's really weird. It's different. You have different things, your IDs and everything. When I first moved down here, I went to the bank, right? Because that's what you do. And what? What are you laughing at? And then I went up to the teller because that's what you do. And the teller said to me, I need some identification. That's how she said it. I need some identification, right? So I gave her my Canadian driver's license. And she says, no, I need something with a picture on it. So I took it back and I drew a little picture on it, right? Wait. So she says, I'm sorry, sir. It's not good enough. I said, what, I gotta be a fucking artist to get an account here? Where are you going? Oh. Go. All right, there he goes. Okay, he's gone. Go, okay. Did she go? I can't see. Did she go?
Yeah.
She's gone?
Yeah.
Okay, it's a he. All right, okay, shh. Okay, everybody, hide. I think that'd be me. What's your name?
Dolly.
Hello, Dolly. Oh, hello, Dolly. You know, it's so nice to have you back where you belong. What? You have a complaint for me. Oh, good. This is a good time.
We went to Ed the Bevix this evening, and the waitress that served you last night said you didn't tip her too well.
What is that? I did tip her. Yeah. I did tip her. They gave me the food on the house and I gave her 15%. What? Oh, thanks a lot. And what is his job?
I'm his bodyguard.
He brought me a beer and, oh, very nice to meet you.
How
are you
doing?
Oh, how you doing? This was a good time to just stop and buy me a drink. Did you time this out? You just like looked at it and you said, let's fuck him up now. That's really great. What's your guys' names?
Tiny.
Not obviously not your body, but your dick, right?
Right. Exactly.
Your girlfriend named you, Tiny. Is she here? Be cool. Yeah, be cool. All right. We won't talk about your little dick. Tiny, look in the camera so America knows this man's got no dick. What do you do, Tiny? What is your job?
I'm a computer operator.
You're a computer operator. What does that mean? If computers want to make long distance calls, they go through you? What company do you work for?
IB Diffusion.
IB Diffusion. IB Howie.
I'd be tiny. This is great. This is really thoughtful of you, but I don't drink. I mean, I don't drink beer. Do you drink? Go ahead, Tiny. Guzzle the whole thing. Guzzle it.
Now that's entertainment.
Dude, excellent clip. Amazing.
So funny. So incredibly funny.
Bravo.
So why Howie?
When I was a kid, I had a record player in my room, which sounds way cooler than it was when I was a kid. You know, it wasn't like I was listening to like the Smiths or amazing music. Or I was listening to stand up a lot. And my mom bought me this Howie Mandel record because she liked him too. And I would listen to it all the time, and I would listen to it when I went to sleep. And I said before about Bobby, like, I loved that voice. I liked that character. He had another character that's name was Ernest, who's an elf. But it's so funny watching and listening to this stuff now, because there were so many jokes that went over my head. Just complete, like, he, some of his stuff was way more sexually charged than I ever realized, you know, as a kid. And then also it's interesting looking back, because, you know, you everybody just watched that clip, and like, you just see how incredibly animated and, you know, all the crowd work that he's doing. Well, that album was chock full of that stuff. So I'm listening to these things and never had the ability to see any of it. So, yeah. And I've just been a big fan of his. And I don't think people realize how good he is.
Yeah, you like, once you make your first like $1 billion, people are like, well, that's what he's famous for, being rich, instead of the comedy. Just like Ellen, people are unaware that she was a stand-up. She's been doing her show for so long.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But okay, so you know, one thing you're gonna notice here is that this is one of those moments where a stand-up is doing crowd work, but not just crowd work to warm up the audience, crowd work as a thing in itself. He's engaging with everyone. And, you know, normally we deal with comics of this stature, like people who are successful, we try to do their earlier sets. But I like this one because, you know, I first interpreted this set as being successful and him being capable of doing this much crowd work with this sort of attitude because of the star power he has. You know, because like most, I don't know if the general audience know this, but if you're like in the front couple of rows at a stand-up show, you might get called on.
Right.
You know, and as much as, I mean, here's the thing, right? Here's like the, I don't know if it's a catch-22, but stand-up comics want people in the front row because it feels bizarre to have such an empty space between you and your audience. But at the same time, the audience knows that if they sit in the front row, there's a chance that they're going to be, you know, politely harassed.
Right, right. I think a lot of stand-ups use crowd work or the ability to crowd work as like a transition between bits. You know, like, mm-hmm. You've got this one piece that you love and you have the second piece that you love, but there's nothing natural to link the two. And so being able to jump in and interact with the crowd directly, like, it's much more natural that you're like, okay, I'm done with that now. And now I could just pick up from wherever I was. And I think one of the things that I love that Howie does, when we go through this, is you can tell when he has bits that he's already written. And is able to throw them in, and they look like they just came off the top of his head, and they're so seamless, and it's so impressive. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's definitely very apparent in the way that he delivers. But also, I think one thing that helps him get away with the crowd work that he does is the energy level that he continues to keep, and the big smile.
Yes.
And so if I could, let's get into that first joke. So he first talks about, he talks to a, what seems to be a couple, and he asks the dude of the couple, in which Allie pointed this out. He only asked the male of the couple, like if what they did for work.
Yeah, the audience is like half men, half women, and he only asked men questions the entire time.
Good point, valid point.
Which was interesting. But yeah, the guy seemed game though. I mean, it's so weird, just a side note, seeing these people, because they're, Howie is like literally my mom's age, and it's weird to think that this was my parents' age and that this is my dad potentially being asked a question, because I grew up in Chicago and he did this set in Chicago, so that was a mind trip.
That's too funny.
But yeah.
Oh, did I totally skip you introducing Howie?
Yes, but I mean, it's not, we can do that anytime. If people want to hear about Howie Mandel, a little brief bio. As most people know him in America, he's the, we know him as a talk show host, the long running host of America's Got Talent and Deal or No Deal, but he actually got a start as a stand-up comedian in Toronto. You can hear his accent slipping in and out. When he was there, he was billed as a wild and crazy borderline psychotic act. And I found it interesting that when he was in high school, he actually got expelled from high school for doing a bit and impersonating like a person at the high school. And he called and started to get to get an extension on the high school, not an extension, like a separate wing added to the high school. like an annex. So literally Howie in high school ended up getting expelled from high school because he impersonated a school administrator to start building like an annex, a separate addition and to his high school. So this guy is like, you can just see that's who he is. And he ended up moving to LA after doing a trip to the Comedy Store, and he performed once the Comedy Store and he ended up getting booked as a regular there. So he moved to LA and then he got on St. Elsewhere when he thought he was auditioning for a sitcom. It was actually a medical drama and it ran for 6 years, and he got to be a little bit of a celeb while he was still doing his stand-up comedy. And over the years since then, he's literally done it all. And I think part of the reason why we forget that he's a stand-up is because he's done it all. He's voiced characters in the Muppet Babies. He's done, he's done video games. He's done a billion movies and TV shows, everything. And it's just funny that millennials only know him as the guy who replaced David Hasselhoff on America's Got Talent. Because this is just, I personally didn't know all of this about him. I thought he was just the bald dude from Deal or No Deal. But I knew a little bit of his background, but I've never sat down to actually like see him work. And this, watching this set, and I know, Dennis, you listened to him. And so I think that, you know, on your record, as opposed to seeing the visual. And I mean, and I can't even imagine, like, if you loved him that much just from the audio, like just seeing him work with this video, like it's just, this just looks like his prime. Like he's his full self here. Like, and this is his, you know, for lack of a better word, like his calling, I guess. Like, this is pure Howie Mandel.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, it's so funny, you know, so many people, you're right, just thinking of as like Deal or No Deal, like he's all buttoned up, you know, really just doing the fist bump and like, you know, with this seriousness about him. And then mm-hmm. to see, not just that he's obviously really funny and not just that he's a stand-up, but the style that he has, that is so mm-hmm. much energy, such like irreverence and zaniness and physicality to it. I don't know. I love it. I love it so much. And like, I'm really happy that we're able to relive some of this right now.
Yeah.
Allie, thank you for, you know, coming in clutch with the bio. I know it's my fault, but now we have a better context as to who this guy is and why he does stand up the way he does. Especially now that we know that right off the bat, he asserts that this guy he's hired to fuck his partner. Which, like, this joke, he hits it 5 times. I don't know if you guys notice it, but he says the same joke 5 times.
Right.
When when doing that first bit of crowd work.
And every time there's a twist to it, though.
Yes.
Which is, mm-hmm. you know, what I said before we turned the mics on, that, you know, this is, I think watching this special is a masterclass in crowd work, right? And the way that he, you're totally right, like the idea that like the guy works for his girlfriend's dad, and so he's like, oh, so you know, you're just hired just to, you know, I need you to sweep up after I make these cabinets and then go fuck my daughter. Like, just coming back to that in different ways, it's so smart.
Yeah.
Real quick, I do want to preview the audience to a possible episode. Because you mentioned a master class in crowd work. I also believe that at one point we will be covering Todd Barry's, because I have the CD right in front of me. Todd Barry's The Crowd Tour. Yeah.
Goodness.
That's the other end of the master, like out of like what you can do with crowd work. There's also the very soft spoken crowd work that can be very pointed. So then, yeah, after, here's the thing, right? I need to ask, would you ever be so bold, or have you been so bold as to make a claim? It sounds like a very nerdy question. To make a claim like Howie did?
Oh, man. That's scary.
Yeah, no.
I mean, he doesn't just do it once. Like, he goes there, like, every single person. Yet you feel so safe with it, too. It's this weird... It's like the perfect kind of roasting.
Yeah, Joe, it's funny, actually. Something you said early on is that, you know, at this time, he's a really big deal at this time, right? Like, he's in a really big venue. Everybody knows him. And he's got this, even though there's like a lot of give and take and there's a lot of audience participation and yelling, he's got the audience the whole time. And he seems to know, like, mm-hmm. just how far he can push different people, and the way if he needs to get the crowd, like the larger crowd, more involved if he's having an issue with a specific person. But to answer your question, hell no, absolutely not. I am not that talented. I am terrified of that kind of stuff. No.
yeah. I mean, it's like it seems like the audience knows that being in the front row specifically at Howie's show is going to put you within a range to be, subject matter for his acts. And then I like when he's going down the line of that front row to talk to someone else. Someone yells out Howie, and immediately he yells back person.
Yeah.
Which, if you've never heard that before, beautiful response, almost like instinctual. But this is one of those things where I don't want to take away any of the magic out of stand-up comedy. But as a stand-up, you know, after doing it for hours on end, you and like dealing with different audiences, you get to develop these canned responses. And you kind of hope that these opportunities come up so you can kind of show your wit in a very natural way.
Oh, yeah. Well, in the moment right after that, right, he says person, and then he just yells it like into the ether, right? And he says, what's your name? And then 9 people shout out their name as if he was talking directly to them. And then his response is, I'll just call you Sybil, right? Which is a schizophrenic reference. So that's, yeah. But that's clearly something that like we identify as like, oh, he's had that. He probably tried that once, or like obviously finds himself in this situation where the crowd's so interactive that he's got that one in his back pocket, but he delivers mm-hmm. it so perfectly.
Yeah, he does.
That's what you call a second nature. And then, oh man, this one here where he sets up Mike. Here's the thing. I'm going to look at this as like every move, even though it's crowd work, it has like at least half of it sort of planned out, where he deliberately chooses for his next sort of quote unquote victim, a person like in the third or fourth row, you know, just at a far enough range that if they were to respond to him, it's not very coherent. And so when he does speak to this guy named Mike, who's there with his buddies, right, it seems incredibly rude, but, you know, he points out that it's incoherent what he's saying. And then he pokes fun of him for like a few more times. And then he does this little bit about how, or like an observation about this, you know, this very common issue where people speak slowly and louder when misunderstood and talking to someone who doesn't speak the same language. And so how do you feel about like him weaving from like a natural sort of audience work to, or crowd work to like just a bit? Like how do you ever plan your routine in that way where you're like, I'm gonna step out of my routine and then come back in and step out?
I don't plan it that way. I try to have a couple of things just in my back pocket if like there's some sort of like heckling or that kind of stuff, which is obviously different than what Howie's doing here. And this is one of those perfect moments that I was talking about before, where like he's got this bit, just like you were saying, he's got this bit that's about like, you know, it very easily could have gone to like this total like Seinfeldian, like, isn't it crazy that the way we, you know, talk louder and slower, right? Yeah. But rather than doing it that way, you're totally right. He picks on a guy that he can't hear, that the audience won't be able to hear, and sets it up that way, then does this pre-written bit that just seems like he just came up with it off the top of his head in that moment because he couldn't understand this guy. And then is able to jump back in. I think that's the most, like, that's the most impressive thing about, to me, about this, and especially this special, like the idea of me going out on stage and being like, okay, I'm going to do an hour, and 30 to 38 minutes of that I don't have. So we're going to figure that out depending on how down these people are to play with me and what kind of jobs they have and what kind of things they want to say. And I think that that kind of commitment and fearlessness, comedians who have that, I just respect so much, because that is just not, I don't need to have like methodical to the word written. But that kind of riff with complete strangers, it's really special to me.
Yeah, I think the audience, when I'm watching this, the word that pops in my head the most with what he reminds me of is magician. And, yeah. And he's like a comic magician, because with watching magic, the audience, and with watching Howie Mandel, the audience wants to suspend disbelief. They don't care that that might have been a canned response. And so it's like I don't even care.
Right.
Just show me it. It's because he's brave enough to do it. Because he's brave enough and charming enough and energetic enough to put himself out there, it's like this satisfying mix of like improv and stand up. It's everything that you want from a live entertainer. You want them to feel like they're discovering new, but you also want to feel safe in that, you know, they like the canned responses, even though there's like, you always feel safe watching him. Like, even though everything's, it's like this controlled chaos in a way. And that's why, I mean, I think that's his magic. And I think that's why when he does do an actual bit, it doesn't have to be as, like, if you isolate that bit and you look at it by itself, maybe it's not the funniest thing in the universe compared to another really more verbal or like differently styled performer. Maybe, but because Howie is just this giant package, it works all, it works because of the sum of its parts, as opposed, and that's the way I see him. Why, that's how I see him as being so effective.
Yeah, it's like he's walking a tightrope that he's got a safety harness on, but like we just don't see the whole safety harness the whole time. So like, you know that he's gonna be okay, but like you're still scared the whole time. Like, this is crazy. He shouldn't be doing this.
Exactly. And that's why you like
absolutely,
because you know that saving harness is right there.
You're like, I know he's not gonna die, but like, this is still exciting.
Yeah.
Oh, I think then we reach a point where I think this is where he really challenges the line, and I think this is where I think he creates the most tension, mm-hmm. where he might lose grasp on the audience. I mean, only because I put myself in the shoes of this next audience member, Dave, right? Who claims to be a purchaser. And then, Howie does this thing where, you know, every time he gets a new profession, he just kind of makes a quick joke about it. Right? And then he like purposefully misconstrues it. And then He orders him to go get him a drink.
Yeah.
Oh, that is so awkward. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
And then it's like Howie's like, okay, I don't know. This is where I don't know if it was planned. He's like, how do I break this tension that I've created? You know, in ordering another man, almost stripping him of his personhood, ordering him to go get me a drink.
And it's a big man. That's not a small man. That's a big man.
Yeah, it's a big guy.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Joe. I think, well, this is the first, we'll get, there's a second part in this bit where there's another equally as tense moment, if not more. But yeah, this one is crazy. And I think when I was wondering the same thing, and I don't know if it's solely this, but I think the biggest, shield, I guess he has working to his advantage is his smile. And he just, he uses it and it just, he flashes it as a way to be like, it's okay. I'm just messing with you, or there's something, or yeah, I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I completely agree. Like there's, it's terrifying to me, right? Like this is the like, it's one thing where you're, you know, like, what do you do? And you can barb a little bit there. And then, but to keep going after this guy and now like the demanding of, you know, him getting you a drink and then not, it be even like, he doesn't, he gets so close to him and then he's like physically touching him while doing this. And you're, it's death defying.
Yeah. I wonder if it's one of those things where the first time he tells him to get a drink for him, Howie is on stage. And maybe, and I'm rewatching it right now. The guy is, he's laughing, but there's a little, he kind of does this little clap and it kind of, it works, but it's not the laugh. Maybe Howie is not that he's, I think it's like a doubling down of things. I bet you there was a decision that he made in his mind where he was like, I mean, if I move on from this, it's kind of like a cop out. The only way out of this awkward situation is through. That's kind of what it feels like to me in like in a fun way. Yeah, I don't know. Joe, what do you think?
He knows that, you know, Dave knows that he can't hit Howie.
Right, that's a very good point, right? Like, he knows, like, I'm going to be able to push this guy, and, like, the likelihood that this guy takes a swing on me is very, very small.
Yeah, and as Ali put it, all he can do is go get through it. this is one of the few times where I'm like, oh, is this too far?
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, you're reminded of, this guy knows, he probably has a good understanding that being where he is in the audience, even though he might have paid more for the tickets, there's a greater chance that he becomes an unwilling participant. And so that's, you know, that's kind of where I'm like, you know, maybe, I'm not saying he deserved it. No one ever deserves things like that, but did he know?
Yeah. I'm also thinking another thing, as a woman putting myself in those shoes, I mean, I thought it was awkward, but I was like, it's kind of funny. I didn't see it as awkward. And I wonder if there's also an element to this where it's like, dude to dude. It's like, I don't want to put down, I don't want to say no to another guy. And, you know, I think that, I don't know. I almost like it more because of the fact that the guy has to surrender a little bit. Because this is a big dude who doesn't look like he wants to give up that control. And I think it works. I think it's kind of, he's like the perfect person for Howie to isolate from the audience for this bit.
Yeah. And then, well, we'll see how Howie continues to jab at this man's dignity in a few more seconds. But then he moves on to Bob, which, this is a very, very, very canned response. And he says, but you spell it in reverse, right?
Oh, I forgot about that one.
Right.
But you spell your name in reverse. And then Bob reveals that he works at a lab. And he goes, well, you know, what are you, a rat?
And then, he's buying time. He's buying time.
And, you know, it's a food laboratory. So also you experiment with sandwiches. You know, which, here we go. Yeah, he's going there. I mean.
Yep.
It does. He's losing momentum a bit. So then he moves back to Dave.
You're right.
Wait, but did anyone want to say anything about the interaction with Bob?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely. I remember when I heard the rat thing, I was like, okay, that's kind of obvious. But then I'm starting to feel bad for my, I'm like, why am I judging him? This is so hard to do. But this is, It's impossible to have a one-liner every single time about the smallest of details, but I think it's crazy how quickly as an audience member you can start to lose trust. Not trust, but like you can start to like start that's going back to Dennis's the tightrope walking thing. It's like the bigger the risk he's taking, the more you're almost inviting in people to I guess criticize. I mean, it's like that big risk, big reward, you know. So yeah, I think that it's just interesting how I felt bad. I feel bad in retrospect having that thought cross my mind where I'm like, come on, a rat in the laboratory, come on, Howie, you can do better. Because like that's insane. Well, he's firing at a million miles an hour, and he should be able to take a second to interview the guy in the audience. But yeah, I don't know if that's because of the nature of his pacing. Yeah,
right. Like, you know? I think that his pacing is so intense that like he can't be like a laboratory. You know, like he can't slow down to build up for something that might pay off stronger, right? His whole thing at this clip is just speed. I just got to respond, and I'm going to hit you with something. And okay, what do I know about laboratories? Rats. Okay, great. Well, you know, the tests on you. What do you? Okay, cool. Yep. And like he may have something. I can't imagine that he is in all of his shows interacting with people who work in labs. So my guess is that like he doesn't have anything really in the back pocket. The you spell it backwards thing for sure he had in the back pocket. It comes off seamlessly, but like that's definitely something he had. And then Joe, you're right though. Like when he sees that it's not going as well, he pivots back to Dave, who he had such a strong interaction with, and takes it up a notch.
And I don't know if you guys could tell from the audio, I mean, you all who are listening, but he goes and tells Dave to get his chair back. But then, what are the order of events there?
Let's see. I think
does Dave go get it, and then Howie moves the chair back?
Okay. Dave is sitting back there. Dave is already back there. So Howie goes over and he's like, what are you doing here? Because he's right now, Dave is in the back. I think that he's like, you can sit up here. Because there's a point where Dave is not even in the front row. Dave is not in the front row at this point.
Right, because Howie moved his chair on him.
And he's like, you can bring it back up here. And then I can't hear what they're saying as I'm just looking at the visual, but that's what kicks it off.
Yeah, because it's too good.
And it's almost like describing what happens to Dave is something that you would describe in the courtroom.
Yeah.
It's like I can imagine a whole feature film like having to do with like multiple accounts.
Your Honor, then he made me sit on the floor where my chair once was. He then retrieved my chair for me, but did not place it back where it had originally been.
My favorite part of this whole entire bit is that when Howie is carrying his chair around, you can see Dave's coat. Black jacket sitting in the chair. Oh, it's such a good unplanned touch. It's like his wallet's in there. I mean, they don't have cell phones at this point, but maybe his pager? No, they didn't have pagers back then either. I don't know. His money is in there. Well, actually,
his inhaler's
in there. All of his receipts from purchasing. But yeah, then he takes him on stage. And that's when he starts hitting him.
Right. So he puts the chair up on the stage. And then, but before he goes to interact with him, Howie has that moment where he kneels down where Dave's chair was and just flips and just like applauds for him as if now Dave is the star of the show.
Oh, it's so good. And this is the moment, the thought of him being reminiscent of a magician to me occurred earlier, but it is full on, like, he's like a circus performer here. Just watching him. It's like, I feel like I'm in Vegas, like, watching, like, Siegfried and Roy or something, I don't know. But in a good way, like, this is not, like, a standard stand-up comedy set. Like, it's, like, departed and become, like, slapstick, like almost, it almost feels like, early 1900s kind of bits, like variety show bits. just the interactive elements that he's having with this guy as he's like throwing this rag at his face.
Oh, definitely. And like that same sort of manner or like the set of manners that are needed to perform slapstick, or the same sort of like being inclined to that sort of humor also like sort of presupposes certain manners, like in a general, I don't know how to put this, but like of a certain time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So like people who do slapstick and the people who enjoy slapstick, it seems like they have a set of manners and like understanding of social cues,
mm-hmm,
that are different, mm-hmm, than like someone who goes and listens to like Def Jam comedy.
Yes.
And so I think in part that's why Dave is willing to oblige Howie, and the constant throwing
their gloves, their rubber gloves. They're white rubber gloves. Yeah. Know. So one of Howie's signature bits that he used to do all the time is he would take one of those like white surgical rubber gloves and put it over his head.
On the head.
Yeah. So that's what those are. There's a pair of those.
That's what it is. And yeah, go on, Joe.
Well, yeah, and then that's why he doesn't give him a big wallop across the face when, also, Howie
a couple of times.
A few times. In almost like the way that it conjuncts like him being a jerk, but also him and his obsessive compulsive disorder, right? It's like in the form of a tic, the way in which he pokes him, right? And like, I don't know if you guys are aware of OCD, but you know, sometimes when you perform an action, it doesn't feel right, so you have to do it again until,
mm-hmm,
it does.
Mm-hmm.
And he does that, and then that he culminates that poking with getting behind him and screaming in his ear, and then screaming a few more times. Where he mentions that he wants to induce a headache.
I mean that he didn't just double down; he like tripled down, and it's just insane how. Yeah, he went all it's almost like if we remade, he's like Larry, Curly, and Moe. Like he's like a Three Stooges kind of vibe right now.
He does this really cool thing though that I've watched back a couple of times where when he's doing the 3D bit and he asks him, you know, have you ever seen one of these, and he throws it at him, right? He says to him, mm-hmm, well, now if somebody asks if you've ever seen one, you can say, yeah, Howie showed me. Like he gives him this moment of like, I'm acknowledging that you and I are having this moment together, and you can go ahead and brag about it to your friends later. And I think that it's like, part like a little bit of disarming, you know, to keep Dave on his side, even though like he has clearly for the past 2 to 3 minutes just made his entire act in this whole room focus on this poor, poor man. But he like sends him off with like this, like, don't worry, like we're buds.
You're right. And I think this is a great, like this encapsulates the audience love that he has. He takes care of him. I'm not a huge fan of the way that we do comedy roasting now. I think it's mean spirited. I largely don't like it, but this to me is like how it quote unquote should be, and how he's making fun of the guy, yet he's also like, there's just this X factor to him. And it's, I don't even want to say it's X factor, because you can also see the technical things that he's doing. But I don't know. I really respect how he can push someone so far, yet also make them feel like seen and safe. And he's constantly checking in with him in these little ways. He clearly understands human nature very well.
I just want to add to what Dennis said about the comment where he's like, well, now you can tell your friends, you know, that sort of thing. I can only imagine like a criminal in Gotham City who partly is doing crime in a very like obvious way in which he would get detected by Batman just so that he can tell people, well, I got beat up by Batman.
That's
really
funny. That's true. I mean, a lot of people would
it's
want
true.
To get
I mean,
by
look,
Batman
Dave paid for these tickets. You know?
Yeah, Dave is immortal now.
It crossed my mind several times. I was like, whose dad? Do I know Dave's right? child? Like, do I?
In Chicago?
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah. Did we go to high school together?
That's hysterical.
Maybe. Like, trying to take a look at him as his wife to see if I recognize the face anywhere. Damn. I don't, unfortunately. A lot of people look like that in Chicago suburbs. So.
Yeah. I like the idea of, like, for the Howie Mandel story, right? They interview Dave. Right. They find Dave from that.
Right? They should.
And then you find out that he's, like, he's become, like, this big Chicago socialite, right?
Because this is his origin story?
Yeah, he's, like, his hair is no longer curly, right? It's very, like, thin and like kind of maybe even like slick wavy back. Or slick back, right? He has like a cool. that cap, like a beatnik. He's almost like a beatnik now.
Yep.
Right?
Gold rings.
Yeah, he speaks very eloquently.
It was Dave pre Howie and Dave post Howie.
Oh, and his hair is no longer red. So no offense. Yeah, no offense to gingers out there. I have a lot of gingers in my family, but this, no badass.
This is the day he started going by David.
No more long sleeve polos. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? I'm gonna keep going further into this, right? And then he's like amassed some wealth, and every once in a while, like Dave will be like not like a maybe like an assistant to Howie on like different projects that Howie's on. And then whenever you go into the trailer without knocking, right, you just see Howie just very gracefully petting Dave.
Oh, my gosh.
It's established like a very long-lasting, bizarre power dynamic between them. And anyways, that's what I'm going to be falling asleep to tonight.
Dave's the oldest set PA on America's Got Talent now.
I was going to say. Oh, my gosh. He's like mid-60s at this point. I'm loving this. Oh, Joe, you know what that means? He's in LA, so I think you and Dave can swap stories and you can replace him maybe. And
as what? As the oldest PA?
Yeah, absolutely. We're gonna fire every other PA in town that's you know under the age of 28 so that you can be the oldest PA.
There we go.
In Los Angeles.
There we go. Let's go. Let's go ahead and reveal almost my age.
What the hell is your age? Oh, right. 16. I don't know. That was the first.
All right. This is weird. All right. So then, and talking about weird, he didn't.
You're the one talking about petting a man right there. I'm not the weird one.
A human chia pet. You're talking about just petting him.
Exactly. Look, Dave was stripped of his dignity, and this is the only way I can like,
make it worse.
Give him any value as a person. Yeah, I have to give him a narrative. I have to like make it in my mind. He developed a complex, and like, I don't know.
I can.
Dave's immortal. Mm-hmm. He's been immortalized mm-hmm. now, and this is the only way. Yeah,
we gave him the tribute that he always deserved.
We get it. You have a special connection to Dave. I understand, Dave. I mean, Joe.
All right.
The biggest plot twist of all. He's like, that's not what he whispered.
You know, I did notice your voice was a little bit different today, Joe. I was wondering. Can you please put that the episode was hosted by Dave?
Oh, that's
please.
So funny. I said we could talk about any comedian except Howie Mandel.
Oh my gosh. Whew. All right. Let's so move on to the next this, joke. Yes, go to the next joke. Loving this.
He makes this weird joke about how whenever he would get boners, his mom would tell him to go run into a wall or something like that.
Oh, was this before or after the point he told the woman to take off all her clothes and he told asked the entire audience if they'd like to see her naked?
All right. I mean, it's before, but if you want before. To talk about that now.
So, I mean, we got to address the naked elephant in the room.
Yeah, I will take things that did not age well, Mr. Mandel, for...
Yeah, deal or no deal. I'm not taking that deal, Howie. You can get that joke out of here. Yeah, that was a little rough.
You know what? Let's just get to that.
Yeah.
Who was it?
Hold on, Dave's date.
I think it was Dave's wife, right? His wife.
Yeah.
It was his date?
Yeah.
It's Dave's date.
Oh, no.
Wait, do you feel worse because you feel worse for Dave? Is that what I'm hearing? Was that oh no for Dave? Or was that oh no for the woman that he said that about?
Well, just a couple that's being harassed.
Dave got this amazing, beautiful treatment that was so much fun from Howie Mandel, and then his date only gets the entire audience shouting, "Take off your clothes."
And then he suggests that he's gonna light her nipples on fire.
Yeah, like this is just textbook, like the man and the date gets to go on stage and be glorified and encapsulated and shined in whatever the heck in this YouTube video forever, and then the woman is just, it's rough. I know he doesn't mean anything by it. I mean, I guess you can say, oh, play it to like the 80s or whatever, but I mean, it's just, you know, it's just it's a stark reminder of how far we're trying to come.
I just hope that someone listens to this or comes across this set, and then, you know, they enter college and they're taking like a psychology or like they're doing like workplace harassment, right? And then like the person leading it is like, hey, can anyone come up with any examples of sexual harassment? Right? And then they detail this whole set, right? And then the person leading's like,
I've been waiting 10 years for this and moment. Then... Yes.
The professor was Dave.
It was the woman.
Oh, thank you. Ooh. Watch this. Women can be professors too.
Damn it.
Sorry, I'm making you.
Allie, that was so good.
You know, I'm sorry.
No, that was, who's uncomfortable? I'm not uncomfortable.
Howie Mandel is, because he's listening to this right now and he is crying that he made that joke in tasteless fashion. That's what's happening. That's why he went bald, because he made that joke. And I can say that bald joke because my father is bald. So it excuses me. I can say bald jokes. I felt really self-conscious there after I just made a bald joke. I'm just going to put that out there.
Is that how you can say things about
That's how it works.
People, if you have friends who are mm-hmm. like that.
Yes, Joe.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, moving on.
Let's just get through these quick jokes. He does a joke about single Joanne, who's up there in the rafters. The one who's a student in Toronto. Then he talks about moving to the States where you need an ID. He gets asked for an ID at the bank, and then he gives them, I forget what, and then they're like, I need something with a picture on it. So he draws a little picture, which is a, you know, I would never tell that joke. But also probably never going to be a millionaire. Then as he's searching the crowd to talk to someone else, someone brings up the fact that they know a waitress at a restaurant that he was at the other night, and he didn't tip well. And this is where I think this might have been half cocked. You know, I don't know if he already planned this, or like this was like a thought like that he had like at some point that he didn't pay attention to, but he just was able to like bring out this one-liner or this response.
That was crazy.
I think it was good. Yeah.
I don't even know how you could plan that. I mean, even if it was something that he had half thought, the fact that, I mean, as you said, like, was able to bring that out of left field is just, but not only the fact that he was able to do it so quickly, but under such embarrassing pressure, like, that's like a deep, like, that was so awkward.
And I think just to jump back the minute before this, I think is just another perfect example of, like, of him weaving in another pre-written bit. You know, in the part about him being from Canada and doing the whole thing with the bank and the Canadian driver's license, like, that's clearly mm-hmm. like a bit that he has mm-hmm. and he has written, and just had the perfect opening by teeing off with the woman from Toronto. It's so seamless that way. Like, he could have thrown it in, I'm sure, at any moment in this set. But to hold on to it and use it at that moment, I thought was great. And then I completely agree with you. Like, to have, like, this, it's such a weird moment, because here he's been controlling this crowd the whole time, has them like worshiping him the whole time. And then here comes a guy who is given like a platform and like says something that like just completely cuts to like brings him down to like brings him down from a mythical level at that moment. Like on some level, like makes him significantly seem more like human and normal. Like I ate somewhere that you ate. So now like you and I are on the same level. And then I treated this person better than you did, person who should have treated everybody better. Like demoralizes him there too. And he could have lost the whole room, but to have that quick of a response and then be immediately able to pivot while they're laughing, like that is so, so impressive to have somebody's brain work that quickly in that kind of a scenario.
Do you guys think, I don't know. I don't want to be like jaded by any means, but could that guy have been an audience plant? I mean, I don't think he was because the look on his face seemed very smug and like he was real happy about it. But I mean, do you think that's a possibility or do you think like that was, that felt real or it doesn't matter?
I don't know that it matters, but I do think that the weird stretch for me is like an audience plant for a one-liner. Like, if Dave was an audience plant, sure,
why?
You squeezed a good 5.5 minutes out of that guy. But, like, a seven-second one-liner, like, that seems like you just wasted however, you know, $30 on that seat, you know, for that one-liner.
Sure. Yeah, I agree. I don't think he was, but it just occurred to me. I was like, well, yeah, that totally makes sense. But, because, yeah, the guy, he seems super, he almost seemed proud to, like, he's been waiting for this moment.
You know, we're going to start a new segment. Allie's like, her segment's going to be called, was this a plant?
Ask every, I will it's find a way to make everything a plant. It's just her walking through a
nursery.
yes. And then you see Dave in the corner. I did want to say something about, the beginning of the moving to America bit, you guys were saying that clearly this is a joke that he's had in his arsenal, which I definitely agree with. I noticed something else. He was doing this arm movement, which he does a lot. He was moving his arm and he goes, I went to America. And he goes, after moving to America, I went to the bank because that's what you do. And as he said, that's what you do. He like waved his arms around like a chicken or something. And then that got a laugh and he goes, what's so funny? And he smiled and then he did it again. And to me, he was like following, he paused the joke for a little, that physical comedy joke. But also to me, it almost felt like it was indicative of how he's following the laughs. It's almost like a choose your own adventure, like comedy thing. Like he's so quick and willing to drop his shit at any point to move on to the next thing based on the laugh. And I really think that's very unique.
Yeah, actually, I do find that commonly when you're more comfortable with your act as a stand-up, making little breaks to acknowledge something that's happened in the room or a certain sort of like audience response, even just clarifying or pointing that out will lead to a laugh because it's like not the elephant in the room, but people like for some reason or another that you point things out that are just true that we all are aware of.
Yeah, I think it just connects. It's another thing. Like it was that just that small little arm movement and that acknowledgement was the like the soft tissue, I guess, connecting all of this together. Like the his body of work with the audience connection and everything. Like that was like. That was an example of the how he keeps that audience on his side by constantly checking in with them, even when he's in the middle of saying something else. It's like, okay, here I'm about to tell you a story about this Canada thing with my driver's license, but you guys are more important. Let me stop to tend to you and what you think was funny and about what I just said.
Also, just like prolific physical comedians can also just like people want to laugh at when you do goofy things if they already know that that's one of your things. So being very able true. To like double and triple down on just that little bit of movement that is, he moves his arms in such a way that is completely unnatural while also saying, well, that's what you do, as if we all do this and move our hands at that same way. Mm-hmm. I think it's just, it's, I've said it before during this, but he's so damn smart, you guys.
Yeah.
I'm also interpreting that movement as like as another tick. And he's found a way to capitalize on his own ticks. And I would say that...
Absolutely.
I don't think he ever makes it, in a mean sense, the butt of the joke. He uses his ticks as emphasis, as little accents in his humor. But we're starting to run long. We've been doing that for about 20 minutes. And so I just want to, can we just quickly talk about the Beer Bros?
Yeah.
My gosh. I love that bit.
Which you find out, correct, one, that Howie doesn't drink. But also, remember when he has
Dane, and then somebody else brings a drink, he's like, I don't want this.
He gets to find out the guy's name is Tiny. Yeah, he says, Tiny, well, is that are you talking about your dick? All right. And then says he has a tiny dick a few times. And my favorite part, absolute favorite part of this whole set, is where he makes him look at the camera and tells him, look at this face, let America know that you have no dick.
Oh man, I love that part, and I can't help but feel like there's a little bit more bite to that joke than the other ones, because when the guys come up to him, Howie says, I'm paraphrasing, something along the lines of like, "Oh, you guys," like he calls out the fact that they just walked up there and they shouldn't have. And to me, in that moment, I could just, the delivery of it was not as lighthearted as the other pokes he had made at people. And I bet you that Howie was just ecstatic to find out that the guy's name was Tiny. And I think, I think that if, for example, Dave had been named Tiny, I bet you he would have made some jokes of the similar effect, but I don't know if it would have happened as quickly and as ferociously and as they did in this instance. I feel like he almost had a pass in his mind to really go at Tiny, because Tiny is saying, I want to be seen, make fun of me, make fun of me.
I completely agree. I think it's such an interesting thing that we got to see like the whole spectrum of crowd work, right? Because the whole time he has been in control with the people that he wants to highlight, even though, and even during interactions, the audience is still yelling for him at certain times and he's just ignoring them. There's times where he responds to them, there's times where he ignores them. And then you've got two guys who walk up and completely assert themselves in the middle of his act in a way that everybody else he has interacted with hasn't, right? He's been in the driver's seat every other time. And for him to like not only take over that moment, be funny, but literally do like the most demeaning thing you could do to, any person who's identified as a man,
to a man,
is look in this camera and tell America you have a small penis. And the guy looks in the camera like, Jesus. He loves it. God bless you, Tiny.
He loves his tiny penis. And when he drank the beer so quickly, he reminded me of Kevin from The Office or something. I don't know. Just the way he was he was so happy.
Well, that's his talent. Drank the beer, like, he's so like, proud. I'm going to show off the thing that I can do. You know?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It was almost cute. I was like, "This is right. Did this become a cute moment?" No.
Yeah, he's like, "I'm gonna go into that auditorium and I'm gonna let people know three things about me."
That is amazing. I know we jumped over it and we're running late, but just the idea of him when that person leaves the arena and him telling everybody, "Okay, hide," that broke me. That. Broke me as just a one-liner. Yeah.
That was so good.
Mention that moment.
I love that.
This is a good.
I love that.
So right before Tiny comes down, somebody gets up and leaves. And he's like, "Where are you going? Where are you going?" And they leave. And he goes, Is he gone? Okay. Hey, everybody, hide.
Oh,
it's so simple. It's so funny.
Oh, I didn't catch that. Damn. Okay.
It is. I love that. It's a solid. It's just a solid, solid set. And yeah, it was just nonstop. Not even this was nonstop crowd work. We didn't even talk.
No,
about
and even if you looked at like the bits that he has that you figured he's written and prepared, if you were to add them up, I think they're less than 3 minutes.
You know what he's kind of like in a way. Have you? I mean, going to a a multi-cam sitcom taping, he's like a crowd. Yeah. He's like a warm-up.
I've worked with the
guy.
Best warm-up in the business, essentially, and it is impressive. So, yeah, his name is Mark Sweet.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Who is that? He's done everything from 2 and a Half Men, Big Bang Theory, Dharma and Greg, Everybody Loves Raymond, Mom. I mean, he's been around forever. And when I tell you that that man can run a sitcom audience and entertain them for up to 4 hours plus and make it seem like it's nothing when it's one of the hardest things to do, it's impressive. But I completely agree with you that like you have to be able to just have those people trust you and let you take them wherever you need to.
Yeah,
Mark Sweet, fantastic. You guys, check him out. Very funny.
One, big shout out to Mark. Two, just a reminder, you can catch Dennis's new album. It's right now it's on YouTube, and as of releasing this podcast,
yes, that's right. Yeah, Tiny Hat Big Jokes. Check it out. You can just look up Tiny Hat Big Jokes, or Dennis Kosh Jacobs. It's Kosh like kosher, not Kosh like coach. And check it out. Give it a listen.
And it's not Kosh like Oshkosh. Well, what's
it's
what's
spelled
that?
The same
it
way.
Is, it like, is spelled the same way, but no,
it's definitely Kosh like kosher. K-O-S-H.
There we go. You know, I sadly have to end this episode, but I do want to say thank you for being on. It was such a pleasure. I don't think I would have ever come across this set if it wasn't for your recommendation. And I think I hope
thank you guys
who,
so much. And this is fun because I haven't watched this or listened to the set in so long too, and it brought back a flood of memories for me.
Yes, it was good,
Allie. Allie, you want to end it?
Oh, yes. I would say we successfully killed that frog.